First case is United States v. Coleman. Appellant ready to argue?
Government?
Appellant may argue.
Chief Judge Suzuki, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Major Zach Schlegge, and along with Major Julie Borchers, we represent the appellant, Private First Class DeAndre Coleman. Chief Judge, I request to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
At Private First Class Coleman's court-martial, a single transaction, a shooting, resulted in the basis for two separate convictions for the same conduct at the same trial. Attempted murder in violation of Articles 80 and 118, UCMJ, and a willful discharge of a firearm under circumstances as to endanger human life in violation of Article 134. In this case, Your Honor, the method of committing the crime, the act, Your Honor. There were no facts that distinguished these two violations.
Let's say I disagree with you and that I think that you define the conduct by the elements set forth in the statute.
Yes, Judge Ryan, and the elements of the crime would be, you know, that we looked at the actus reus as well as the mens rea. And here, I think, in this case, the actus reus...
No, I'm talking about the elements set forth by Congress for the statute.
Yes, Your Honor, and I concur. We look at the elements of the statutory elements as dictated in Blockberger. The actus reus in both these were the same, and that is the discharge of the firearm, and the mens rea for the willful discharge specification subsumed the mens rea for the attempted murder specification.
What do you mean by subsumed?
Essentially, is a subset.
We were in that a lagoon 30 years ago, and we sort of pulled ourselves out. Do we really want to jump back in there?
In this case, Judge Suzuki, the specific intent for the attempted murder is arguably part of the general intent of the willful discharge of the firearm, the wrongful...
Do we have an intent Venn diagram here?
No, and I think that's...
Well, I'm asking. I mean, you're conflating the whole thing. And I think the point I'm making, and I think the point Judge Ryan's making, is the only way out of that lagoon was the elements test, because otherwise you had just a mess. And do we really want to jump back in there?
Just Suzuki,
or what are you asking us to do?
I agree that there potentially is a mess, to use your words.
Well, I was there 30 years ago. It was an actual mess, not just a potential mess.
But I think the unique nature of an Article 134, where essentially in this situation, where proof of the element, the service discrediting, the terminal element, that was the same as the attempted murder. And now you have a situation
where... No, we held explicitly that you've got to prove the terminal element separate from anything else. We've held that. Let's not go there.
I mean, I think in this case, the judge accepted part of the terminal element, right?
Yes, Judge Ryan. Yeah, the prejudicial to the good order and discipline. And arguably, had he not done that, we would not be here. But because the service discrediting aspect of it and that proof of the conduct itself can satisfy that element, and both the actus reus were the same for both offenses.
Counselor, if you were to use the elements test, could you win with that argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
How can you win with that argument with the elements test?
Your Honor, there is no requirement that the elements, you have to line them up exactly.
Didn't we say in Jones, right, that it's better to line up the elements than to practice is surely preferable and more sound than judges at the trial and appellate level making subjective judgments as to whether the elements line up? Right? So don't we actually line them up? compare them and see if they are the same.
Certainly, but not necessarily in the same order that they appear in the MCM or particularly, again, with an Article 134 offense where Congress describes the elements in a broad term, and then the president determines the elements in a much more narrow.
But the elements test is objective. You seem to be wanting to apply a subjective test. So that's why I'm asking you, if we stick with the elements test, which is the precedent of this court,
yes, Your Honor.
How do you win?
I think, you know, Your Honor, when you take the elements and you apply them, and there is an aspect of subjectiveness to this case, because, again, there is that unique nature that presents itself with the Article 134.
I mean, even if we were going to be subjective, right, which, of course, we're not, isn't it the case that you could discharge a firearm willfully and wrongfully under circumstances such as to endanger someone's life without intending to endanger their life? Without intending to kill them.
Yes,
right?
Your Honor.
I mean, you could just be out there popping shots at a passing car.
Your Honor, but in the way that the government charged this, though, identifying those three individuals makes this unique. The government could have very well charged this discharging a firearm in a public place where there are members of the public present. But they chose to simply identify those three individuals for which they also charged the attempted murder, almost in an alternative theory aspect.
Well, you know, it works the other way, too. It's not just a terminal element. You've got a requirement for specific intent under attempted murder. And that is not hanging out there in Article 134. So either way, it seems to me like you end up in a blind alley.
Josuka, my argument...
Tell me.
...is that, you know, arguably, a general intent crime, which is broad, that intent is broad, a specific intent to actually kill would be a subset of that.
Well, so that was my Venn diagram question. You're saying now that it is a Venn diagram. Here's your general, here's your specific, and it's wholly contained within.
In this situation, yes. Right,
but is general an LIO of specific, or is specific an LIO of general, or where are we?
Your Honor, I believe that the specific intent would be an LIO of the general because you're going from aspect.
Well, you got something else.
To a more specific one, Your Honor.
Counsel, may I go back to the same conduct point that Judge Ryan brought up earlier? Suppose the appellant had fired one shot at the car, attempting to murder Specialist QB, but it actually missed and killed one of the other passengers, AW or YW. Just one shot. Attempted to kill QB, ends up killing or wounding one of the other people. Just one charge there because it's only one, it's the same conduct? So you attempt to murder one and you miss and you kill somebody else, and that's just one charge?
One charge regarding the willful discharge, Your Honor?
Or? No, we charge him with attempted murder of QB and murder of AW the child.
And they did that here in this situation, Your Honor.
But if they're convicted of both, is that multiplicious?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's multiplicious?
Under the facts of this case, because there was...
Well, I mean, just under the facts of my hypothetical, though, you attempt to murder A, and you miss, and you murder, and you kill B, you cannot be charged with attempted murder plus murder?
Attempted murder as well as...
Attempted murder of QB and murder of AW.
Yes, sir. Because the willful discharge here...
I'm putting aside willful discharge. I'm just trying to figure out what you mean by the same conduct. We have one shot. You attempt to murder one person, and you end up hitting somebody else. And I think you just said that it would be multiplicious to charge you with attempted murder of A and murder of B.
No, that is not my argument. I thought...
Why isn't that just the same conduct argument that you made before?
Because, Your Honor, here, the fact that the 134 and the willful discharge of it, they're basically just showing them the method of committing the murder, the attempted murder here. And I believe in the hypothetical that you presented, there that is the actual crime. So I think that they're somewhat distinguished based on the way that this is charged in this case, the alternative theories.
So,
go ahead. I was just going to say, you know, the law is what it is. I was interested in looking at the question of what was the same transaction for purposes of multiplicity, and so it's not your fault that the law is in the other direction. I was just interested in this issue.
Yes, sir.
So are you saying that with Article 80 and Article 134, it doesn't matter whether we know any of the underlying facts of the case, simply by looking at the elements in each, it's your position that there can't be two charges? Or are you saying we have to take another step and look at the underlying facts, particularly in your case, to make that determination?
Judge Olson, it would be the latter. And here's why. Because you obviously can make that, and I think when the government charged this may have very well not have been multiplicious, considering the fact that you would have had prejudicial to the good order of discipline had they proven that. But when the facts came out and when the judge accepted the prejudicial to the good order, he did not accept Specialist QB. The facts essentially dictated that they were essentially multiplicious.
So isn't there a fundamental problem there then? You're saying we're not marrying up the elements. We're not comparing them. We're looking at something else. And isn't that contrary to the binding precedent of this court?
And also, just to add more fun to the question, like why, given the fact that this wasn't raised at trial, would we place your client in a better position than he would have been in if he'd raised it at trial, where they clearly would have just looked at the elements?
You can answer either fun question.
Or both.
Yes. Judge Olson, with yours, I think here is that when the government uses the same proof for the greater numerator offense to prove the terminal element of the 134 can be an LIO of the enumerated article. And I think, I assert that does fit within the court's most recent precedents in Miller and Jones, because there that was a per se rule that Article 134 would not be an LIO of the enumerated offense.
So you can answer my other fun question. Like, wouldn't if we did what you were asking us to do, which is not look at just the elements and line them up, but look at the underlying facts and the record of trial and what was actually transpired, wouldn't that be putting your client in a better position than he would have been at if he had raised the issue at trial and said, Your Honor, you need to dismiss Specification 1 of Charge 7 because it's multiplicious with Specification 1 of Charge 1.
Your Honor,
I think the answer is yes.
Yes, I think, but after findings, when the judge found that way, that would have been an appropriate time, Judge Ryan.
So let me ask you this question. In the context of a guilty plea, if you fail to raise a multiplicity issue at trial, it's deemed waived. Right, unless the charges are facially duplicative.
Yes, Your Honor.
So what is your position as to the waiver issue in this case? Or is your argument that they're not facially duplicative? Or that they are facially duplicative?
Yes, Your Honor. But that they're facially duplicative because of the way that the evidence was presented
at
trial.
But you would agree that on their face they're not facially duplicative. You have to go behind the language of the charges, the specific language of the charges, without asking you to concede that anything.
Yes, Your Honor, but I think here what the unique situation is again, how the government decided to charge this. They charged this by naming the three individuals in the willful discharge. They could have named this as essentially firing a weapon in a public place at a vehicle, but they chose to name those three individuals, and they also named those individuals as in attempted murder specification, just three separate specifications. They also did this later on for the second firing incident where the judge found him guilty of the willful discharge of Specialist QB at his home, but they did not. He found him not guilty of the attempted murder specification. So essentially, the government, out of all these 17 specifications that they charged, is presenting what almost looks like an alternative theory, even though they did not do that. I'm sorry, Judge Ryan.
Thanks.
Had Private First Class Coleman been acquitted of attempted murder charge, the government would have been precluded. Sorry, Judge Suga, I see that I've missed that.
If you wish to quickly wind up.
Thank you, Your Honor. But I think arguably, had Private First Class Coleman been attempted to, been acquitted of the murder charge, the government wouldn't have been precluded from subsequently bringing the willful discharge violation in a subsequent trial. And therefore, that clearly is multiplicious. So subject to the court's additional questions, we request that Private First Coleman dismiss Specification 1 of Charge 7 as multiplicious with Specification 1 of Charge 1.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Major Mark Sawyer, and along with Captain Meredith Picard, represent the United States. This court should find that attempted murder and willfully discharging a firearm under circumstances to endanger human life are not multiplicious. Multiplicity occurs when a court, contrary to the intent of Congress, imposes multiple convictions or punishments for the same act or course of conduct. But there is a presumption that when Congress has enacted two distinct statutes, two distinct offenses, that is permitting cumulative sentences or punishments, and legislative silence alone does not establish ambiguity to rebut this presumption. However, unless Congress has explicitly stated otherwise, we can determine congressional intent by simply looking at the elements test first established by the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, that's sort of horn book legislative law, but you've had the terminal element for 200 years, and it's kind of hard to figure out from whence it came and what Congress's intent was. I'll just leave it at that.
I will jump right into the elements test.
Jump into the
Supreme Court, Your Honor, and I hope to answer that issue on the terminal element, which I think this court has actually answered in its precedent in Miller, Jones, Fosler, and Girard, I think is how you say it.
Well, it hung open for 200 years. Somebody had to do it. Go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. So, I mean, simply put, if you lay out the elements of these two offenses together, they're just not the same. Attempted murder has the specific intent to kill, in this case, Specialist QB, and then willful discharge of a firearm has the terminal element. And in addition, the way the government charged it in this case, the government charged two additional victims besides Specialist QB, A.W.
Counsel, let me ask you about that. Suppose QB had been the only person in the car, and there's no confusion about that, and appellant had fired one shot at the car attempting to murder QB. Could he be charged with both attempted murder and the reckless discharge of the firearm offense in this case because they're different elements?
Yes, Your Honor. First, on the elements test, if we lay out both of those charges side by side, there's different elements. And as I supplemented this court last week, they also address two distinct evils that Congress is trying to prohibit. In one case, we have the evil of the attempted murder, which is the specific attempt to kill a person, and the other is the evil of opening fire and endangering other people.
So, counsel, on your position, appellant's counsel just finished arguing that suppose that he'd been just charged with attempted murder and had been acquitted. Could there then be a new charge and a new trial just on reckless discharge of a firearm?
I believe so, Your Honor, under the facts of this case. But what we have here, though, is a single trial, and we're looking at the Blockberger test to determine whether or not in this trial, in this single judicial proceeding, can we charge both. And in that case, we use the Blockberger test. And under that test, absolutely, there is no multiplicity here because we have different elements. We have the specific intent to kill for attempted murder. We have the terminal element of conduct prejudice, good order discipline, or service discrediting for the 134 offense. We also have the additional victims that the government put into the Article 134 offense.
What is the relevance of the additional victims? Isn't your position that it's not multiplicious even if there aren't any additional victims?
It is, Your Honor, but to the extent that the defense is arguing that the way the government charged it made it multiplicious, the way the government charged it made it absolutely not multiplicious because the government is alleging other victims in the case.
What about, I realize this isn't the issue, but it struck me as curious, the overlap between Specification 1 of Charge 7 and Specification 3 of Charge 7. Because basically Specification 1 lists all three of them and Specification 3 lists only one.
Your Honor,
never mind, it's not fair. It wasn't the
issue. as the Court is aware, there were a lot of specifications in this case. It's hard for me to... I don't have that one quite in my mind right now. The terminal elements mean something. We know they mean something because this court's precedent says they mean something. We also know they mean something because the judge actually applied the standard beyond a reasonable doubt, looked at the terminal elements, and acquitted appellant of one of the terminal element. The conduct was prejudicial, good order, discipline. The terminal element is an additional element. It's an additional fact that the government had to prove in this case. And contrary to appellant's argument, it is not implicit in the Article 85 to 132 offenses. This court explicitly overruled Foster, and to the extent that Foster said it was explicit, it is not. Placing the two statutes side by side, we have two different statutes. On top of that, as I alluded to earlier, we also have two different evils. We have the community offense, which is the willful discharge of a firearm, and we have the intent to kill. And the Supreme Court has at least previously used the two different evils test to determine congressional intent. Because in the end here, what we're looking at is congressional intent. Did Congress intend for these two statutes to be, or punishments to be imposed separately, or did Congress not intend it? So long as these punishments, so long as these convictions are not contrary to congressional intent, then this court should find that they are not multiplicious. So we also ask the court to look at the separate evils test established in Woodward and Albernez, which we subsided last week. Finally, even if this court comes to the conclusion that these charges are multiplicious, the court should apply the plain error test and find that appellant has not met his burden to show plain error. That test looks at whether or not there's error, is it plain and obvious, and did it prejudice the substantial right to appellant. In this case, any error is not plain and obvious. Simply putting the two charges side by side, we have different elements, looking at the separate evil.
Then that would mean that they're not multiplicious, right?
Yes, Your Honor. to the extent that we're looking at whether or not they're facially duplicative, they are not facially duplicative.
But that's the test for the first part, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. That's okay.
I don't know how to explain it other than that.
In this case, it wasn't raised at trial.
It was not raised at trial, Your Honor.
And so then what happens? Then what's the next step?
Then apparently we raise that appeal, and this court looks to see whether or not it's facially duplicative.
Because if they're facially duplicative, what's the problem?
Then it's multiplicious, Your Honor.
And it's double jeopardy, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then it's plain obvious error.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So the appellant would also fail. He would also fail under a plain error test.
Well, let's say we get by plain. Is there prejudice?
I think so, Your Honor, because there's two convictions there would be
prejudice
if we get that far.
Okay.
Whether
but
or not
the government's point is that it's not plain.
It's not plain, Your
Honor. It's not plain.
Whether
if,
or not
if,
it's
if,
not
if it's plain, well... If it's not error at all, it's obviously not plain.
The government's point is there's no error, and any error certainly is
not plain.
And so you never get
to prejudice.
If we get to prejudice, Your Honor, we'd ask it to be sent back to the CCA for sentence reassessment. Pending your questions, this court should find that attempted murder and willfully discharging a firearm under circumstances to endanger human life.
Thank you, counsel. Does the appellant have rebuttal?
Your Honor, may it please the Court, quickly addressing my colleague across the aisle, his argument regarding the different evils. Different evils test, Your Honor. The appellant has no issues with that. That is standing. However, here what is charged as a separate evil. You have the firing at the vehicles regarding Specialist QB and the occupants of the vehicle. There are no separate evils based on the way that it was charged. Arguably.
But we're looking at Congress's intent in enacting separate statutes, and we're looking at the separate evils, not the facts of this case.
Yes, Your Honor.
And it's true, right, that the shots might have not hit the car at all. They might have hit some random passerby.
Yes, Your Honor, but willful.
So he could have taken the shot intending to kill whoever and instead randomly hit some other person.
Correct, Your Honor. But the Article 134 is essentially for prejudice, service discrediting or prejudice good order, maintaining that good order and the customs of the service. And the President defines anything beyond that. And here, the separate evils, again, I acknowledge that it is on this case, Judge Ryan, but it gets at this, the way the government charged it, gets at this the separate evils.
Major Shalazi, let me ask you this. Could you have brought a claim of an unreasonable multiplication of charges at this point?
Yes, Judge Sparks.
You could have, right?
Well, notwithstanding the grant from the court. Yes, Judge Sparks.
How would that argument have gone?
Hopefully better than this.
I'll relieve you from your answer, but I did notice you have over 2.5 minutes left.
Thank you, Judge Parks. But under United States v. Palagar, the court stated that the remedy here is to dismiss the overlapping language, and the CCA could have just simply lined through Specialist QB, and didn't. And so we would request that you remand this back to the
counsel. On that last point, you're suggesting with the Article 134 offense, if they had not named Specialist QB as a passenger in the car, and so that it was clear that the shot was attempting to murder QB but recklessly endangering the other people in the car, that would have been okay.
Yes, Your Honor, I would not be here today.
And certainly you disagree then with counsel for the government's position that there's just no way you could have these two charges if QB had been the only person in the car.
Yes, I disagree with that. Subject to any questions?
Yeah, well, you were starting to say dismiss and
dismiss,
remand.
Remand, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Any other questions from members?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 10:15.